Hello, and welcome to episode 3.1, the September 13th, 2023, here we go again edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, including interviews with artists and creators across the county. It's been a refreshing summer this year, with temperatures staying mild and very few days in the high 80s or 90s. I think I'm pretty lucky to live in a region where weather extremes, at least for now, are not prevalent. Apart from the Canadian wildfire smoke in June, we don't experience extremes like hurricanes or heat domes or local wildfires. I don't know that it gets any better than summers in Chautauqua County, with its abundance of festivals and regional events. As the fall begins to creep in, we'll have an abundance of leaves turning color, pumpkin spice everything, and my favorite, grape pie. There's much to be grateful for around here. So, with all that in mind, let's get the third season of Notes from the Aisle Seat rolling with an overview of the fall season of events at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. Here's Rick Davis, Executive Director of the Opera House, to clue us in on all the upcoming fall events. All right, joining me now to kick off the third season of the podcast is the 1891 Fredonia Opera House's Executive Director, Mr. Rick Davis. Rick, how are you?
I'm great, Tom, and thanks for doing this with me.
Yo, thank you for coming on. I mean, I know this is going to sound funny, but it's hard to believe it's now 3 years. This is the third time we're doing this. It's going to be an annual thing now, huh?
Hooray.
It's great. Okay, so let's get it rolling. We usually have you on at the beginning of each season here on the podcast just to give us a preview of what's coming on at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House, hopefully get people excited with some of the events, and encourage people to become subscribers because of all the wonderful things you do down there. So let's get the ball rolling. I know we got some very early live concerts and many other live concerts coming up. So let's start with the concert series and see what you got coming up for us.
Sure. Well, we're very excited about Deco Ensemble and Eden Espinoza that you are also featuring on this episode of the podcast. So I won't go into detail about those. Other than to say that it's something we're really, really looking forward to, both of them. Jacob and Sarah, as you know, are Fredonia residents, and so it's great to be able to feature some hometown talent. And Eden is just, well, she's Eden Espinoza, and she's done just about everything on Broadway, and we're just thrilled that we're able to bring her in this fall. And one thing, I don't know if you, not having heard your interview with her, if you were able to go into much detail about the masterclass that she's going to be doing on campus the day of the concert in the afternoon at 2:00. So that's something that's open for public observation. It's free admission if you wanted to go see how she works with some of our brightest young musical theater students at the college.
Yeah, I know they're going to be very thrilled to have her over there. She's a big name to really catch, both for the audiences here in Fredonia at the Opera House and also for the students in the Department of Theater and Dance. And I really would recommend anybody go and listening to hear what she has to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So aside from those two, both in September, we're really excited talking about hometown people doing a concert. Doug DeJoe, who is a Fredonia native, grew up here. He calls Fredonia the best small town in America. And he has lived in Nashville. He's now living up in Washington near Seattle. He's coming back to give a concert, and it's something that we're really, really excited about. Tickets are going like hotcakes for that performance. If you don't have your tickets yet, I encourage you to call the box office or stop in or go online. And he's going to bring friends up on stage. So he's going to have a couple of other folks from the community still here coming up and perform with him. And Russ St. George is going to open.
Oh, wow.
For him.
Okay.
So we're excited about that. That's on October 13th. And that's going to be a great concert as part of our Folk in Fredonia, the Gilman Family Music Series. We are participating with the Fredonia Jazz Festival this year. As you know, it was not held last year. It's back. And we are going to be the venue for most of the concerts on Saturday. There's an afternoon showcase featuring three or four regional jazz bands. There's a headliner that's coming in who's just phenomenal, Nicole Zoraitis Quartet. She's out of New York City, Grammy-nominated singer, pianist, songwriter. She's bringing her quartet in for the headline performance Saturday evening. And Nick Weiser is bringing his sextet to open up that performance. So tickets are online. You can go to our website, and it will redirect you to a third-party site that is handling ticket sales for the Jazz Festival. And there's two other days of the Jazz Festival also. Thursday night, there's a concert at Domus Fair Restaurant that's part of the normal Jazz Society series. And on Friday at the college, there is an alumni jazz band that's performing. And I believe that is free admission. So lots of jazz that weekend. It's October 19th, 20th, 21st. And it all ends here at the Opera House on the 21st.
Wow, that's going to be a nice thing to bring back. I also see that, you know, one of our regional regulars, Dave Galando, is going to be here. Dave Galando in sax time. So we got, as you say, a lot of local talent coming around performing.
Yeah, he's one of the afternoon showcase bands, and so we're excited to have him here. And there are some bands that I've never heard play before, so I'm looking forward to hearing them as part of that afternoon showcase.
Okay, so what else you got coming up for, live concerts? I know some of them are, I think the next one is the Tong Shepherd Duo?
Yeah, Jessica Tong, who is a professor at the university, and her duo partner, Michael Shepherd, she's a violinist, he's a pianist. They're going to be doing a recital concert here at the Opera House, and it's... on an unusual evening, because it's on a Wednesday night, they're actually kicking off a little mini tour, and they're having their first concert here at the Opera House. So for those who are interested in coming, please be aware that is on a Wednesday evening, not our usual Friday or Saturday for live events. But Jessica and Michael, phenomenal duo. We're excited to have them performing. And then in November, that's on October 25th, right after the Jazz Festival.
Right.
And then in November, we end our Folk in Fredonia series with a really interesting program called From China to Appalachia. And it's Grammy winners Kathy Fink and Marcy Markser with Chiao Tian. And Chiao is a Chinese hammered dulcimer player. And Kathy and Marcy are Grammy-winning American roots musicians. They play banjo and guitar and mandolin and the typical instruments you think of with folk music and American roots music. And they have a fascinating program that combines Chinese folk music, American roots music together. They're also, we're working with the college, the School of Music at the college, to have them present a workshop that afternoon before their concert. They're here on a Sunday. We're doing some weird concert nights this fall, but they're here on a Sunday, again, on a tour, part of a tour, and they happen to be going by the Fredonia area on Sunday, so we grabbed them. But they'll be doing a workshop in the afternoon on campus that's open to the public, again, free admission, and then a concert here at the Opera House that evening at 7 o'clock. So that rounds out our live on stage concert series.
Yeah, you have it for the fall, but I see you've also just got one in the spring, which we'll remind people later in May. Sparky and Rhonda Rucka coming.
Yeah, so and they're part of our Folk and Fredonia music series, which, by the way, is celebrating 30 years here at the Opera House in 2024. So we're celebrating that fact, and we're going back and bringing some of the musicians and performers who appeared in the very earliest days of the Folk and Fredonia series, 30 years ago, 25 years ago.
Oh, and nice.
Sparky and Rhonda are one of those groups, and we're excited that they're coming in May. They're based down in the South. I actually forget, Mississippi or Arkansas or Alabama, one of the very southern states. And we're excited that they're coming all the way up here in May to give a concert and kind of kick off the Folk and Fredonia series.
Wow, nice.
For next year, yeah.
Yeah, they'll be fun to see. And I also know that the one thing that's also coming in the fall that we're trying to get more people to come to, because I think it's very good stuff, is the Ecstasis Duo has their 2.0 Young Artist recitals coming up as well.
We do. More live music, but what's unique about them is their free admission here. We do put a donation box out. If you want to throw a couple bucks in, that's great, but otherwise it's free admission. And yeah, they're going to do two concerts. The Ecstasis Duo student recitals, it's Eliran Avni and Natasha Farney, who are the Ecstasis Duo, and they've performed here at the Opera House in the past. But these are students of theirs and students from the School of Music, and their objective is to have the students play in a different environment other than on campus. Different venue, different audiences, to get a handle on not just that very safe, insulated college setting. Have them do performances out and about. And we're thrilled that they're coming on October 26th and December 7th to give one-hour recitals. It's usually four or five students or student groups. Sometimes it's a trio, sometimes there's quartets. I think once there was an octet, and then some solo musicians as well. But usually four or five different offerings. It takes about an hour for the recital, and they're free at 5:30 in the afternoon. So if you're one of those patrons that doesn't like to drive after dark, or you know, you prefer something earlier in the evening, this is for you, and we hope to see many of you at their concerts.
Yes, I always enjoy seeing the young talent coming across. I think sometimes that's more interesting than a lot of other things that take place. But God knows we have a lot of it over at SUNY Fredonia. And speaking of free, you've been running these wonderful Chautauqua County history lectures that are free and open to the public, too. And there's a couple of them coming, one in October, one in November.
Yes. The one in October is called Gleanings from the Ellis Rowley Home in Leona. The home is no more there, but it was located on Route 60. And if you go to our website, you'll see a picture of it. And I know you will remember this home. It was belonged to the Ellis family. And before it was razed this past fall, Gail Dash had an opportunity to go through it and glean some artifacts and some documents and some writings and really interesting historical information from the home. And she's going to share that as part of her talk on October 12th. And then in November, the Town of Pomfret historian Todd Langworthy is going to do a program called Veterans of Pomfret's Past, because it's close to Veterans Day. On the talk is November 9th, close to Veterans Day. He's going to celebrate 200 years of notable and noted veterans from the town of Pomfret, and not just their military career, but also highlights of their contributions to the community after they serve their military. And that series is also free. And it's their Thursday evenings at 7 p.m.
Let's wrap up, I think, because I believe that you already have the entire season for the Live at the Met series coming up, because they just let you know what the season is, and there it is. And there's a lot to chew on there, but let's see how much of an overview we can give for people who are interested in opera.
Yeah, there are, you're right. Live at the Met gives us their entire season all at once. And as part of our contract with the Metropolitan Opera, we present the entire season. This year, there are 9 operas, and they start out in October. On October 20, actually, the very first opera in their series that's part of their Live at the Met series is being transmitted live on October 21st. But that's the date of the Fredonia Jazz Festival, which we are already committed to. So we'll receive the Live at the Met signal and record it, and we will present that opera on October 28th. And it's a new opera called Dead Man Walking. And it's based on the book by Sister Helen Prejean, and you may be familiar with the movie that was made out of it with Susan Sarandon in playing Sister Helen. This is a contemporary opera of the same story. It features Joyce DiDonato, who is one of today's superstar opera mezzos, and that will be here. We will present it on October 28th. And then the second opera, which is on November 18th, is X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X. And it features, for people who saw Fire Shut Up in My Bones, here by Terrence Blanchard. This stars the same singer in the title role, and it's part of the Met's, these two operas are part of the Met's objective and goal to bring some younger people into opera and to experience opera, and a more diverse audience as well. We're thrilled that they're doing that, and we're thrilled that we're able to be present those two new operas. And then there are some of the more traditional operas. Madama Butterfly is part of the series. There's some that you've not seen or heard for quite some time. Florencia on El Amazonas. La Forza del Destino. There's several that don't get a lot of play either at the Met or in regional opera companies. The entire season, all 9 of the operas, they're out on the Opera House website, and you can explore them more in depth that way. $20 is the top price, $10 if you're a student. It's great. It's a great program.
It's great. And tell us, once again, I can't let you go, Rick, without talking about a little bit about becoming a member, the benefits of becoming a member for the 1891 Fredonia Opera House.
You know, it's very timely because we're now kicking off our 2024 membership drive. We have new membership level benefits that are available and explained on the website. But 20% of our operating budget comes from our members and the contributions that they make annually. And it's such an important source of revenue for us. When you are a member of the Opera House, you receive discounts on tickets to selected programs. You receive an invitation to the annual holiday reception that's on stage in December, and several other benefits, many of which are new this year at different levels. So I urge you to explore the membership levels on our website. I encourage you to join. You can join for as little as $35, and your donation helps us present programming like what we've talked about this afternoon. And it's very important to us, and we very much appreciate all of our members.
And I appreciate you, Rick, for all the stuff that you do at the Opera House, for giving me this opportunity to do the podcast and all that wonderful, great stuff. So let's look forward to a great 2023-2024 season for the both of us.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. You can find all the details on these events and much more on the Opera House website at www.fredopera.org. Tickets to events can always be purchased online or by calling the box office at 716-679-1891. And please be sure to consider a membership for 2023-24. Your membership contribution of as little as $35, less than a tank of gas these days, will help ensure that the Opera House will continue to bring these quality arts events to the Northern Chautauqua County region for many years to come. The saxophone is not, generally speaking, one of the instruments I associate with classical music. I tend to associate it more with jazz, but I got a real education on how the saxophone can make classical music come alive in ways I hadn't known. Jacob Swanson, one of the founders of the Decco Ensemble, gave me a few insights into the ways this instrument can make astounding music as I talked to him and Allison D'Amato about their upcoming concert. Well, I'm pleased to welcome onto the podcast a couple of members of the Decco Ensemble. One of them is Jacob Swanson. Jacob is one of the founding members of the ensemble, along with his partner, Sarah Marchitelli, and they founded the ensemble in 2011. The third member of the ensemble is Catherine Peterson. She came along as a voice member of the ensemble in 2019. And also with me today is Allison D'Amato, who is somewhat of a, I guess, she comes in and on and off and in and out and contributes mightily to the ensemble. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
You're Thanks. Welcome. So Jacob, let me start with you real quickly. Give me an idea of what motivated you to start a saxophone ensemble.
So Sarah and I met at SUNY Fredonia when we were undergrad students in 2005, and we played in saxophone quartets and other mixed chamber ensembles and a lot of new music ensembles throughout our time at SUNY Fredonia as undergrads and then grad students. And once you leave school, a lot of your connections with people tend to, you know, as people move around the country and get jobs and whatever, you're not always in proximity or geography with one another and able to maintain a quartet or a trio for very long or anything. But Sarah and I were glued together, and we decided to start the Decco Ensemble with sort of an intentionally ambiguous name, knowing that we were going to be playing together and we would be playing with whomever we were able to work with at that time. So, you know, throughout our more than 10 years of Decco Ensembling, we played quartet concerts, concerti with orchestras, worked with poets and dance companies and other saxophonists and cellists and wonderful pianists and vocalists, and it's enriched our lives mightily. So Decco has always been a saxophone-centric ensemble, but we've been appreciative to all of our many collaborators along
well,
the way.
Well, you know, I mean, it's they're just like the three of you. It's very hard to keep an ensemble together with just two instruments. But I have to say, listening to some of your music that you have on YouTube, I was completely fascinated by the fact that you could actually put together, you know, a piece with just two saxophones. That was kind of interesting.
Thank you. We've been beneficiaries of some wonderfully talented composers and some good music we stole along the way as well. That's,
everybody. Yeah, all good artists steal, Jacob, so don't be ashamed of that. Allison, you've joined them as a pianist, and I did hear, now that I think about it, I did hear some of your work. You put out a series of YouTube videos during the pandemic, and I think I heard some of your work on the pandemic. So how do you fit in every once in a while? Do you play when needed? Are you gonna be playing for the concert on the 15th of September?
Yes, definitely. I'll be part of that.
Allison will be playing the most on that concert.
The most notes, using both hands.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the great thing is, I mean, I am a pianist. I'm on the faculty at Eastman School of Music, and I also collaborate a lot in the Fredonia area with a lot of the faculty here. And the great thing that happened just a little while before the pandemic happened was that Jake and Sarah moved next door. And they're just, it just seemed this obvious thing, especially when we were all kind of, you know, sheltering in place, that we could just play music together right there without having to go anywhere.
I can't overstate the warmth and gratitude we have for like our community that we're a part of, and you know, our wonderful next door neighbors, Lynn and Allison, and you know, the community that we've been fortunate to have stumbled into.
Yeah, and it's pretty special. And the thing also, and I'm going to put another plug in for Deco too, is that the great thing about them is that, yes, it's saxophone centric, but it's really about collaboration. Mm-hmm. They value collaboration. Jake and Sarah themselves, obviously, they're married and they're together, but they are fantastic players together. There's just this great symbiotic relationship. And as a collaborative pianist, I really value that focus, and it's a great joy to just jump into such a unified musical ensemble.
Yes, you know, I noticed that in their work. I mean, I actually loved those pandemic videos. They were great, but the nice thing about them was the fact that you could really look close and see the two of them just looking at each other. You could watch the body language. You could see them kind of, you know, I don't know what the secret body messages are, like, you know, here's a cutoff, and we, you know, but it really did look locked in. I have to say you're right about that, Allison.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And I also give a shout out to Lynn McMurtry, who I heard perform on one of those too as well. Just wonderful.
Right. So Lynn and some of those from home concerts were for our Bach the Vote mini series that we ran on YouTube, because you know, famously, there's the Rock the Vote movement, and so we just went as nerdy as we could with it to Rock the Vote, and playing with Lynn and Allison was really wonderful.
It was really really interesting to just watch those videos and get a sense of the whole thing. So, can you give us Jacob, Allison? Can you give us a sense of what your program's going to be on the 15th?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So our program is really meant to be fun end of summer celebration of, we're releasing our first studio recording as an ensemble, and we will be representing pieces that are on that recording. But it's a lot of our favorite musics to play together. And I did intentionally plural that, but like, where we'll be playing the Brahms Horn Trio, Allison, Sarah, and I, for on soprano, tenor, and piano, as opposed to violin, horn, and piano. Some music that we've lifted from Piazzolla, from Vivaldi, and a new piece by Rob McClure, who's a comp faculty at Ohio University in Athens. We had a residency as an ensemble out there this past February. His music's represented on the recording release. And then Catherine is going to be doing a set with Allison, if you'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I want to also mention that Jake sort of alluded to is that he is a bit of a master transcriber. as he steals from other repertoire. This Brahms horn trio is one of the great chamber pieces in the repertoire. It's also fiendishly hard for everybody involved, really. Yeah. He has to play up in the highest violin range, and there's, you know, a great piano part. But we've performed it a number of times, and it's really just such a meaty, great piece. And Catherine, I'm really thrilled to see she's bringing some songs in by almost all African-American composers that are just, you know, we're in this kind of time where the voice repertoire is just exploding. Well, repertoire in general, I think, is exploding. And she's absolutely right in there with championing some of these really lyric and fabulous settings of poems by these composers that I know will be more well-known as we keep going. One of them is Rozefany Powell, who's still living, and she's a university voice professor in Alabama, and Robert Owens, who is a favorite discovery of mine, who's set poetry from all over the German literature as well as American Langston Hughes settings, and it's just going to be really wonderful variety of stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Some of those pieces are actually, I found, quite haunting in a way. You know, some of the pieces I caught a performance that you did with Catherine. I don't know where it was, but the background was like a brick fireplace or something like that, and some of those pieces were quite haunting. And the mixture of her voice and your saxophone was... you know, there's a lot of music out there that for what you do that is capable of that feeling because of the kind of instrument the saxophone is and can be.
The saxophone is it's a real like a mockingjay of instruments. You can imitate a lot of different sounds, and in that respect, it's akin to both like the human voice, because there are so many colors and so many shapes and so many gestures and textures that you can make with the saxophone. And I think kind of the next closest comparison I can make is like electric guitar, honestly, because you have so much like expressive bending potential and so much potential to manipulate the sound into like humanistic, unorthodox like tone production, I guess, but it's in that in betweenism that the saxophone, I think, really becomes a real voice and palette that I like working.
Now, Allison, yeah. I'm going to ask you a little question, perhaps as an outsider, just looking at how they play. Because I think you kind of alluded to it. Their technical proficiency is really kind of fascinating. You know, as I'm watching their fingers move across the various valves and stops, what do you see in that technical proficiency when you hear them play and watch them play and accompany them that you find so inspiring?
Well, you know, I really enjoyed just what Jake was talking about in terms of the palette of colors, because especially when he does collaborate with Catherine, it's really fascinating all the levels of timbre that you can play with and that you can try to find to blend with whatever the other instrument is. And I don't know everything about how you do it, because sometimes it is in how you sort of manipulate the keys, and sometimes it's at the embouchure level.
I think fundamentally the saxophone should be played as a singer would sing. We think about vowels, we think about how we're holding our embouchure, we think about how we're supporting with our breath. And I think the saxophone is at the height of its beauty when it's the most absent. The closer you can not be caught up in the tool that is the saxophone and just get to a sort of vocalized tone production, then the better it is. The more invisible it is, the better it is.
That's nice. And then watching just when he and Sarah are working, like for example with the Brahms trio, there's really such intent on blending their sound, but tuning all of those things, really recognizing the overtones that happen in different composers too, you know? So it's just all sorts of understanding of style as well as their own instruments. That's really just multi-leveled.
And if you are familiar with the Brahms Horn Trio, the technical feat that is the second movement in the piano.
Oh my god!
So I would play that saxophone part any day, like over. Like, I mean, we're lucky to have the opportunity to present it because it's simply not something that every pianist would be willing to take on or do so beautifully. So
thank you. I'm gonna go practice it's a after this.
Well, it'll be a treat to present it with.
Oh, that's gonna be like a lot of fun. All right, listen, you two. Thank you very much for your time. I so appreciate you coming on, and we're gonna really be looking forward to your presentation at the Opera House on Friday, September 15th, starting at 7:30 p.m. And I think it's gonna be a wonderful way to kick off the Fredonia Opera House's fall season of entertainment. Sounds like a great time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you haven't got your tickets to hear the Deco Ensemble perform at the Opera House, you need to get on that quickly, as their concert is coming up on Friday, September 15th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $15 for adults, $13 for Opera House members, and $5 for students. Tickets are available at the Opera House box office at 716-679-1891 or online at www.fredopera.org. Here is the arts calendar for the next few weeks. The cinema series is already up and running with two movies in the coming 2 weeks. The mockumentary Theater Camp, about a group of theater kids who stage a show to save their beloved summer theater camp, screens on Saturday, September 16th and Tuesday, September 19th. Also, the summer blockbuster Oppenheimer, which probably needs no introduction at this point, will screen on Saturday, September 23rd and Tuesday, September 26th. All screenings begin at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are available at the door only. Cost is $7 for adults, $6.50 for members, and $5 for students. The Marian Art Gallery at the Rockefeller Arts Center at SUNY Fredonia has opened its first art exhibit of the season. Not Gay, an exhibit curated by noted queer art historian Jonathan D. Katz, charts the energy and vitality of trans identifications across a range of artworks from the immediate post-World War II period through the present day. The exhibit will be on display until November 12th. See the Marian Art Gallery website for more details. The Can-Am Trio, an all-female woodwind trio, will perform in the Rausch Recital Hall on Friday, September 15th at 8 p.m. Admission is free. The Rockefeller Arts Center's first pop series event features Fleetwood Mac, a Fleetwood Mac tribute show. The show will be performed in the King Concert Hall on Saturday, September 19th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets can be purchased at the campus box office by calling 716-673-3501 or online at www.fredonia.edu/tickets. The Western New York Chamber Orchestra, under the baton of Maestro Glenn Cortese, will be performing Vivaldi's Gloria with the Fredonia Chamber Choir on Sunday, September 24th at 3 p.m. in the King Concert Hall. The Fredonia Jazz Showcase will perform on Wednesday, September 27th at 8 p.m. in Rausch Recital Hall, and the Fredonia Concert Band will follow them on Thursday, September 28th at 8 p.m. Admission is free for both events. Finally, Main Street Studios will be presenting a remount of the SUNY Fredonia Theater and Dance Spring 2023 production of Romeo and Juliet at the Frank Lloyd Wright Greycliff Estate, located in Derby, New York. This is a special one-day production on the beautiful estate of renowned architect Frank Lloyd Wright, named Greycliff, and sits on the shore of Lake Erie in Derby. The performance will begin at 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 23rd, and make use of the house as a theatrical environment. More information, including ticket prices, can be found at experiencegreycliff.org. And remember, if you have an arts event coming up and would like to get it mentioned on the arts calendar, please send an email to operahouse@fredopera.org or call the box office at 716-679-1891 with your information. In the early 2000s, a strong crop of female Broadway stars began to make their presence felt on the Great White Way. One of these talented performers was Eden Espinosa, who played the role of Elphaba in the musical Wicked on Broadway and the First National Tour, as well as the role of Maureen Johnson in the closing cast of the musical Rent. She is taking one day off from rehearsals for her upcoming appearance in local boy Michael John Lacuse's latest musical, The Garden of Annunzia, opening at Lincoln Center on November 20th, to come to Fredonia, teach a masterclass, and give a solo concert on the Opera House stage. It was a great privilege to get the chance to speak with her and record this interview. Well, I have to say that if I could possibly have had my choice as to who to interview for the first podcast of the third season, getting someone like Eden Espinosa would be right up there on the top of the list. Broadway star, wonderful singer, great personality, and she will be coming to the Opera House on Friday, September 22nd at 7:30 p.m., and I suggest everybody get their tickets early. Eden Espinosa, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. It's a great privilege to be able to talk to you and take up a little bit of your time. I'm bursting with questions, so I'll try to contain myself and ask only a few, but we'll start off. I want to start off with your early career, how you got started in the business. I mean, Broadway is one hell of a place to try and break into. And yes. like everybody else, I'm always interested in how performers manage to make that breakthrough. So could you give us a little bit of background about that? How you got to that place?
Sure. I grew up in Southern California in Orange County. And I pretty much did everything that I could do without becoming a member of Actors Equity. I worked at Disneyland, I worked at Universal Studios, I did industrial work, studio sessions, regional theater. And I had been auditioning for Broadway shows and tours for quite some time and getting very, very close to the end, if you will. And a casting director kept bringing me in, and he called me one day and told me about a new musical that was having a workshop, and they were looking for their lead, and they had seen people in New York and haven't quite found what they were looking for, and so they were coming to LA, and that was for the musical Brooklyn that I originated years and years ago, and that's what took me to New York.
Oh, that's interesting, because most people would probably think about you as getting into the cast of Wicked and then doing Brooklyn, which came afterwards. So I didn't realize that it was the reverse.
Yes. I had been involved with Brooklyn years before I had ever been cast in Wicked. So and that actually played a part in my role in Wicked, because when I went in for the audition, they had already had their out-of-town tryout in San Francisco, and Stephanie J. Block actually was in the ensemble of Wicked. She had originated the role of Elphaba years and years before, and you know, things always go kind of crazy in our industry. We have a roundabout way of getting to the end sometimes. But she was cast in Boy from Oz, and she called me and said, you know, I'm not going to be a part of the cast anymore, but they're going to be looking for an understudy or a standby for Elphaba, and you should tell your agent to go in. And so I went in and auditioned, and they gave me the option. Do you want to be in the ensemble and be the understudy, or do you want to be the standby? Which the standby does not perform in the show every night. You just sit and wait. And if somebody's, if Elphaba gets sick, or if she goes on vacation or any of that, then you're the first to go on, basically. And I knew that Brooklyn was coming down the pike. I knew it was coming to Broadway. It was just a matter of when. And I sort of wanted that to be my first, you know, performing every night role. So I chose the standby, and mainly for the purpose that I wouldn't be performing every night. And I wanted Brooklyn to be my first, not real role, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, your first, your first lead, your first appearance.
Yeah. And so it just like happened that when I would go on for Elphaba, and this was like right at the beginning of social media, YouTube had just become a thing, chat rooms had just, message boards had just become a thing. And when I would go on, people started talking, and that's sort of how my fan base started growing. And they came over to Brooklyn when I left Wicked to go to Brooklyn. And so it was serendipitous how it all came to fruition.
Now, let me ask you just a little bit about playing Elphaba. You played her on Broadway. You played her in San Francisco. You played that part on the Hearst National Tour. You played that part quite a lot. What is it about that part that you think makes it so interesting to play, to keep on playing, to keep on wanting to play?
Yeah. I think the humanity of the character that our job is to show the audience. You know, it's a character that most people don't want to investigate or know about because of the Wizard of Oz. You know, she's the villain. Mm-hmm. And for me, the opportunity to continue coming back to it was that I had more to learn from playing the role. And, you know, playing Elphaba always gave me a mirror inside my soul to learn things about myself. And as I was maturing, like, I played that role from the ages 25 to 32, which are pretty formative years for, you know, getting to know yourself as a woman, as an artist, as an adult, a fully grown adult, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that's the reason why I kept going back. And then that's the reason why I ultimately stopped. 'Cause I was like, I think I'm done learning from this particular person and role, and I have more things to expand upon.
And you also got to play the role of Maureen Johnson in Rent, another big name, major musical of the era. What was that like a little bit to take on that one?
Oh my gosh. Well, Rent, I was always been a fan of musical theater. Growing up in Southern California, you don't have access to it as much as you do here in New York, but it was something that I always loved and wanted to do. But I wasn't, you know, when I was growing up, people didn't have like musical theater intensives and college programs as much as they do now. So I just sang along to the radio and records and was in children's theater groups and stuff. But my voice was more pop, I would say. And when Rent came out, was the first musical that I listened to that I was like, oh, I don't have to like alter my style that much. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with it. And I set my sights as like, oh, Maureen, I want to play that part. And it was the first Broadway show on Broadway that I saw. My best friend in high school and I took a trip our senior year with our moms and got tickets from a scalper because it was the year that it was, first year was open. It was my senior year in high school. It was like impossible to get tickets. And so it was a role I always wanted to do. And I had auditioned for it over and over again over the years and never quite got it until the closing cast. Our producers from Wicked had collaborated and produced Next to Normal, and Michael Greif directed that. And Michael Greif asked our producers about their experience about working with me and what they thought about, you know, me being in the closing cast and playing Maureen. And I'm so grateful they had good things to say. And it was like one of the first major jobs that I was just offered. And it was an offer to come in for that summer and close the cast. And we filmed it for movie theater. So it's forever archived, which is beautiful. And it was an amazing full circle moment for me. Actually, the opening night of Wicked, and this is before I had a digital camera, so this dates us. I took a picture on a disposable camera of me, Adina, and Tay. And I told Tay Diggs, I said, who was her husband at the time, I said, I have this picture of the three of us from when I saw Rent, and I want to take a picture of us tonight and put us side by side for Adina, just to show her, like, she's always, I've always looked up to her. And so that was a present that I gave her, a side by side picture of the three of us in 1996 and the three of us in 2003. Wow. So it was very meaningful. Playing both of those roles were very meaningful for me. So that's a little Rent story.
That's nice. That's a great one, boy. pictures of the three of you, and of course, I have seen the film, so I saw you perform, and that's a whole nother.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story. So I'm interested in the fact you mentioned that you always thought you had a pop sound to your voice a minute ago, and now you're doing solo albums and taking that opportunity to sort of transition yourself over to creating albums. You have, I believe, two of them out now. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Talk a little bit about that transition, how you're making the transition to being a solo pop artist.
Well, my first album is modern Broadway songs, but we took them out of context and made arrangements as if you would hear them on the radio, which was a really cool project to reimagine these songs and to look at them as standalone, tunes. And then that led me to writing. I had written songs just for fun when I was little. And then I think over time I sort of got too heady about it and was judging things too soon and wouldn't, this isn't good. And then I wouldn't finish something. And then I was just in a time in my life where I needed to process a lot that was happening for me. And so I just started writing out my feelings and thoughts in journals. And I had come across a producer that I wanted to work with for my second album, which was always supposed to be just like the first, modern Broadway songs that we take out of context. And he said to me, you know, I've only been talking to you for, this person was not involved in theater at all. So he's like, I've only been talking to you for like a little bit, but have you tried writing? Like, I think you have so much to say and such an interesting perspective. And I'd like, for me, I want to hear some of your stories and how some of your thoughts and feelings. And I said, well, I have a lot written down, but they weren't intended to be songs. And he's like, why don't we try it? And so that's what we did. And so my second album, Revelation, is all my journal entries.
Well, I have to say, if I may say, I saw a couple of them, I believe, on YouTube when I was doing my research on you. And they, for me anyway, just it was a whole different Eden Espinosa than I had really come to know through, my knowledge of Broadway and your particular biography and history there. And I went, wow, that is, there are some stunning tunes there. I hope you're going to do some Opera House.
Thank you. It's interesting as I, continue to do concerts over the year. It's hard to really, and this is, I've had several friends who colleagues who I've known from musical theater who started doing their own music and had to step away to really step away from musical theater to really focus on the music side. And I understood a little bit why they did that, because certain venues or certain audiences, they really only want to hear the Broadway stuff and don't want to hear the original stuff. And not in a negative way, but they know you from this, so it's hard to sometimes meld the two, but there are certain ones that I put into the Broadway set as well, so we'll see.
So speaking of different and unique, you're going to be working once again with Michael John Lacusa. And if there is a more unique musical theater composer in the world of musical theater today, I don't know who that is. He is an iconoclast of the first degree and an amazing composer who continually goes unrecognized by Broadway. And you're going out to the Old Globe, I believe, in San Diego to work with him on a new musical based on the life of the choreographer Daniel Graciela.
Yes.
And you did something with him earlier before. Can you speak to me a little bit about his work and what attracts you to his work? Because he's amazing.
Yeah. Well, the exciting thing about this is we did do the production at the Old Globe in 2021. Mm-hmm. And now we are heading to Lincoln Center in New York, which is so exciting because Michael John's work, it's been a number of years since he's had a show here in New York. Well, honestly, what drew me to him was the audition. I got called in for a musical that he wrote called Rain, which was based on the Somerset Maugham story. And it was the first time that I had worked in quite a number of years, actually. Like I took a step away. I took an acting program here in the city, and then I did the album, my first album, and then I was doing concerts. So I hadn't really done a theater job in a while. And I booked this job and I went to San Diego and I just fell in love with his work and the way that he writes humans, in particular women. There are sometimes, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but there have been times where I've played a character written by a man that has it's like you can't really get into actually the female experience, but Michael John has this way of writing women that is just so delicious and nuanced and rich. And this particular story, it's an honor to portray these women who raised Grazie and made her who she is today and on the path that she has taken throughout her life. And her and Michael John are very, very close and have collaborated on this for years. So we are thrilled to take it to New York and to have New York audiences who know and love Grazie just have a little bit more insight into her upbringing and these women who raised her, her mom, her aunt, and her grandmother.
Yeah, and when is that opening so people know?
We are opening in November. I am the worst person to not know the exact date, but our previews start in October. I want to say in the teens somewhere, and then we open November. I want to say 20th. Gardens of Annunzia gave me the time off to still come and do the concert. They were gracious enough, and the team at the Opera House was gracious enough to work around the schedule. So we're still going to make it happen. I'm still going to teach the class and do the concert all in one day, and it's going to be amazing.
Well, Eden, thank you. Thank you so much for coming. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you and listen to your stories. And I wish you the best of luck with the performance of Gardens of Annunzia coming with my. Did you know Michael John, by the way, was born and raised here about 20 miles from here?
I didn't know that.
Yes, he was.
Oh my gosh. Uh-huh. I love it.
I think that's one of the reasons why I know about Michael John more than most people do, because he's from the areas. But it's a lot of fun talking to you. Man, I appreciate it. And
thank
you once again. Good luck with the concert. Hope to see you there. Hope you get a great crowd.
Yes. Thank you so much. See you soon.
Eden Espinosa will be performing live at the 1891 Opera House on Friday, September 22nd, beginning at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $25 for adults, $23 for members, and $10 for students. Also, Ms. Espinosa will be teaching a master class from 2 to 4 p.m. that same Friday at the Rausch Recital Hall on the SUNY Fredonia campus. The master class is free and open to the public. Don't miss your chance to hear this stunning talent live and in concert.
Look around, the world's a lovely sight. Lovely sky and sea, well it used to be. Look around, the us grow. Well, that once was so.
And that's it for this Here We Go Again edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat. My thanks to Rick Davis, Jacob Swanson, Allison D'Amato, and Eden Espinosa for being my guests on this episode. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a production of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on any of the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891, visit the website at www.fredopera.org, or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Notes from the Aisle Seat is available wherever you get your podcasts and also on the Opera House YouTube channel. If you like this podcast, please consider following us by clicking the follow button on our home website at aisleseat.podbean.com and spreading the word through your social media feeds. If you have an arts event you'd like featured on the podcast, why don't you drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org and we'll see about featuring your event. Please try to give us a month's advance notice if possible to facilitate timely scheduling. If you have any suggestions, comments, or criticisms of the podcast, just drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org. We'll be glad to receive your feedback. Our next episode will be available on September 27th, 2023. I'm Tom Laughlin, and until then, be safe out there, and be kind to one another.